Before we begin, we're going to be reading Exodus 23 and 24. But before we begin, I want to make a clarification, or maybe something I didn't quite make myself clear last week, about what's called the judgments, chapter 21 and 22 of Exodus. And yes, it's eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And it looks like Jesus came along and reversed the entire process. Be careful. He didn't change the judgment. Now, I will answer that question, and many of these judgments you will see seem to be where Jesus turns around, or Yahshua turns around and makes it null and void. He doesn't make it null and void, but pay attention to exactly who he is talking to and why. Very, very critical. He did not reverse the judgments of God. If he reversed the judgments in this point, he is not the Messiah. So this is my word for you today, is I cannot explain the answer to that yet because we have to reach a certain point. As I said last week, I want you to kind of be there with them. Now remember, they heard these judgments for the first time in their entire life. It's not something that they are raised up with. And we talked about how hard those judgments are. And it should have been hard. God's judgments are not something you get to have a piece of candy and then instead of having a cake. You have to pay the price completely. And we'll get on to the judgments later. But I just want to make that self clear. You will find many things that's written when he says, and you have heard it been said. Why does he say that? Because if you were back there at that point in time in your life, you did not own a scroll. You did not own the things. You only heard from the speaker who is speaking, reading the Torah, so you've heard it said. Well, of course you've heard it said. And so when we look at these things, sometimes we kind of throw that thing of, oh, you heard it said, oh, but oral law. No, almost everything he said, you heard it said. You'll see it written in the Torah. Because that's what they heard. And it seems like he's reversed it. Or made it null and void. Like one, thou shalt not swear. Wait a minute. Isn't that the opposite of what the Bible says? Yes, it does. Why did he make it null and void? No, it had a purpose behind it. It's very important. And we reach there. We understand what he was doing, what he was saying. But I want you to kind of be there with Moses right now. I want you to be there with the leadership right now. And they're hearing these things for the very first time. Be like a, huh? What? And say, oh, are you going to contradict the judgments that he just got through saying when the mountain quaked? You got terrified and frightened out of your gourd? No, you pay attention. You say, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? For two chapters there was judgments and judgments and judgments. Which means because of human beings, we're flesh and blood, we say, well, that's not really what the judgment really is saying. It's really meaning, and it really should be this way. Why? What is written is written. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? So I'm going to be kind of, verbal in letting you know that don't go, and you have a wonderful thing God has given you. He has given you hindsight. He has given you foresight. He's given you wisdom. He's given you understanding. You didn't earn it. You didn't go to school and win it. You didn't go work like a slave to learn all these things. No, he gave it to you. Now we have to say, okay, now I got it. What am I going to do with it? Okay? So we look at the judgments. The judgments of God are strong. They are not easy. You understand what I'm saying so far? So we're getting that. We're not going to judgments today. We're going to another section of the book of Exodus. I want Exodus now, chapter 23 and 24.
You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden, and you would refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. You shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the word of the righteous. Also, you shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, and your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. And in all that I have said to you, be circumspect, and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. 3 times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you, at the time appointed, in the month of Abib. For in it you came out of Egypt. None shall appear before me empty. And the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labor, which you have sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. 3 times in the year all your males shall appear before the Lord, and you shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, nor shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until morning. The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Do not provoke him, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the Amorites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars. So you shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless your bread and your water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of you. No one shall suffer miscarriage or be barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send my fear before you. I will cause confusion among all the people to whom you come, and will make all your enemies turn their backs to you. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before you. I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little I will drive them out from before you until you have increased and you inherit the land. And I will set your bounds from the Red Sea to the sea, Philistia, and from the desert to the river. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out before you. You shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. Now he said to Moses, Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, All the words which the Lord has said, we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people. And they said, All that the Lord has said, we will do, and be obedient. And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. Then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, and it was like the very heavens in its clarity. But on the nobles of the children of Israel he did not lay his hand. So they saw God, and they ate and drank. Then the Lord said to Moses, Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone, and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, Wait here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them. Then Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day he called it to Moses out, and he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. So Moses went into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights.
Any comments?
Well, I'm assuming that the 70 elders and Abihu and Nadab and Aaron and Moses went up like halfway up the mountain or something when they ate and drank with God. And, well, my first comment is, well, it says in Scripture more than once that no one has seen God and lived.
Correct.
So.
We'll get there.
Explanation.
I'll explain it best I can. Best I can.
I'm learning to think cyclically, like the Hebrew way, instead of the Western way, linearly. And I noticed there's a little pattern here. You know, the 40 days and nights in the boat, and now we're 40 days and nights at the top of the mountain. I just think that's nice, interesting parallel.
When the temple was built, there was an outer court, and then there was the altar, I guess.
Then there was
the Holy of Holies. And it's almost the same. At the mountain there, you had the people were afar off, it said, I think. And then Moses and there is a real parallel there too. And then Moses was the only one who could go into the Holy of Holies, or it looked like he went into the Holy of Holies, but whether, yes, okay, well, no.
Well, we'll get to that much later in the I don't remember if it's Exodus or Numbers, but a very fascinating thing about Moses. You have to wait.
In Exodus 20, we have the Ten Commandments. But yet here they mention that they hadn't been carved in stone yet, because God specifically says, Moses, I want you to come up with me, and one of the things we're going to do is you're going to carve some of this on stone.
Correct.
So if they hadn't been carved on stone yet, why do we have Exodus 20 having the Ten Commandments if they haven't been carved on stone yet?
They were just heard, not written.
Wasn't it when God spoke to all the people, he spoke the commandments in Exodus 20, and then over here he tells Moses to go up to the mountain to write it down, right?
And a lot more.
And a lot more.
We'll get there. We're approaching the 40 days of Moses here now. Before we get there, we have to see something here. All right? What is it, the pattern you see? Before we get there, let's go back now to, you know, the end of the 20th chapter. He tells Moses to build an altar. So he does. He builds an altar. A very large one. Very big one. It's very important to know that he had to do that before he went up to the top of the mountain on his 40-day journey. A 40-day period. All right? Now, we talked about, in the 20th chapter, we talked about what's called commandments, right? It's not the quote, it's not the law, quote, it's not the precepts, quote, it's commandments. This thou shalt, or thou shalt not. And here, in the 23rd chapter, it also says thou shalt, or thou shalt not. These are commandments. Now, carry out the commandments, we have to listen to say, okay, when do we carry them out? How do we carry them out? And for what purpose? Right now, we don't have that yet. We'll find it as we go on in the journey, if I can do it with Moses now, and find out exactly what's taking place. Now, once again, put yourself in their shoes for this the very first time. Wow, you know, they're still there. More than likely, my personal opinion, the chapter 21 and 22 and 23 and 24 are still talking and still being addressed. God is still talking, but not to the whole congregation, but to Moses and Aaron and two other men, Hur and 70 men. He's still talking. Leadership had to be there. We'll get into that detail a little bit later on today. When he talked about his judgments, he wasn't talking to the conglomerate. He's talking to Moses, Aaron, Hur, and the 70 elders. It's very important because that chapter pretty well tells you who he's addressing. You remember way back when they started coming out of Egypt? God caused, when his anger, it was anger, to both Aaron and to Moses, get off your case, get out there, and he told who he wanted leadership to pull them out of Egypt. And so they picked the men that God named. And so they pulled them all out, and they were the leadership that helped them leave out of the land of Egypt. They didn't remain, they left. Right? Now, I mean, they didn't remain as leadership. Once the job was done, it was done. Now, other people will have to do another function. He says now, very fascinating, thou shalt not raise a false prophet or a false report. Well, that makes sense, right? Doesn't that agree with one of the commandments? Which one? No, false witness. So once the commandment said, now he's clarifying what he really is saying. You know what that commandment really is all about? This is this. You will not make a false report. You will not put thy hand in with wicked to be an unrighteous witness. So we have a clarification of a magnification, if I can say, of the commandment of shall not bear false witness. But he wants to make sure that these people, the leadership, the 70, will understand, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. You know, that's real easy to do. How many times have you seen riots or seen multitudes of people out there, and there's destruction, and there's destruction, and there's destruction, and some leader is trying to run out there and be part of them, so they get a big name. Well, says, don't do that. Don't go and to the mob. Don't go with the mob. And even in the case of a poor man, you do not rule in his favor because he's poor or weak. If the poor man or the weak man did something evil, don't rule in his favor. Don't give him a cop-out, as we do here in our society, right? We in our society say, well, because of his upbringing, because of, well, what happened to him when he was 4 years old, or whatever happened to him when his mom abandoned him, and he had no other choice, and he emotionally got out of control, and he went and did something evil. You don't rule in favor of him. That's the commandment. Right? So those are simple things to learn, and we understand. As he expands this thing, this also has to do with bearing false witness. Do you understand this part so far? He's expanding one of those commandments here that we may be able to understand it and have a better picture of it. And then, of course, about your enemy. Where is that commandment in there? Well, what do you say now? If your enemy, what? His animal's gone astray, his donkey's gone astray, what are you supposed to do about it? Chase the donkey farther away? You're supposed to bring it back. But he hates my guts. So what? Now, remember, this is a brand new to you. First time in your entire life you heard this, you said, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. This guy's out to do harm to me, and you want me to do what for him? It doesn't make sense, right? Now, since we have this wonderful thing called hindsight, we say, well, we understand it. Because Jesus said to love your enemies. We understand that. Wait a minute. Did he come up with a new law?
No.
No, he just stated what was already said, right? How do you love your enemy? When he's in trouble, like this one, what are you supposed to do? Oh, give him a nice good kiss on the cheeks. Give him a big huge hug, a bear hug, and walk away? No. You're supposed to help him get out of his dilemma, his problem. Now, that's what real love is all about, right? I said last week, the Torah is made up of three major things. What is it made up of? Come on. Jesus said it. I didn't.
Justice, mercy, and faith.
Faith. What is faith based upon? It's faith based upon thy word is true. So every time you say the greatest thing, what did the Apostle Paul say? Faith, hope, and justice. Or faith, hope, and charity, right? Now, you cannot have any charity or any hope if you don't have truth with you. Faith is based upon truth, not how you think it ought to be, not what you think somebody thinks it says. It's based upon only one thing, what comes out of the mouth of God. Nothing else matters. When that is very stable in you, when you know that you have the truth, and you hear the truth, and you walk the truth, guess what can happen? Then you can have hope. Right? And once you have that, guess what's going to happen next? I can give charity now. If you don't have that hope, if you don't have that faith first, if you don't have that truth first, you can never, ever have hope. The priority is that way. That's what Apostle Paul is referring to. Now, with that being said, let's move on. Of course, about bribes. Thou shalt not take a gift for the gift of blind, for gift blinds the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. So a righteous person can be vulnerable, can't he? You know, if you pay him enough, give him a bribe enough, offer him something wonderful. Guess what happens to the righteous person? Now, this is not, listen to the commandment. It's not that the righteous person, not in this particular spot, should not take a bribe. What does it say? You should not offer a bribe. Now, that puts it on your shoes, doesn't it? We should not even consider offering a bribe. The righteous really could turn it down. But you are faced with a violation of a commandment. Are you not? Yes, you are. At least I see it. You may see it differently. He goes on about the Sabbath day. He reiterates the Sabbath day. What are you supposed to do? You're not supposed to make sure you do not have anybody working for you. You don't do that. I don't care whether it's a vineyard. I don't care if it's a field. I don't care whether it's whatever it is. You don't do it. You let them have a day on the seventh day. Very important seventh day. We'll get there in a minute. And it's a rest to you and to them. Then he goes into another area which they had not heard of yet. He's introducing something to them. Thou shalt what? You will do what? Thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. How many? Three. Now wait, that's the first time you heard it. Okay. You just came out of Egypt. And you came out of Egypt, and lo and behold, well, yeah, days of unleavened bread, we got that one. Three feasts. Okay. Well, Shavuot was the second one. But they didn't recognize it at that point in time. And then he introduces the next one, which is not yet down the line. And we'll see in the next few chapters where that fits in. And you got a picture. So they're beginning to learn something. These leaders, the 70 people, the 70 leaders, must return back to their people and tell them exactly what Moses says, talking to them, that God is telling them. They're not to explain it, not to interpret it. They're just supposed to tell them, this is what the commandment he said to do. Remember, these people were still scared. They're still afraid. The calmness didn't calm down. The smoke was still there. The fire was still there. He says, you'll keep unleavened bread. We understand that one. And he said, in the feast of harvest, which was the day that they came out, the feast of thy labor, which thou hast shown in the field, the feast and the feast of ingathering at the end of the year. Now, all this was supposed to be done when they entered into the promised land. They couldn't do it until they get there. All right? So it's a future thing that's going to take place. Now, we'll get to more detail here, but I want to clarify. I'll get into it a little bit later on. But verse 18, thou shalt not offer the blood of my sacrifice with unleavened bread, or with leavened bread there. Neither shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until morning. Then he says, the first of the first fruit, this is the head of the first fruit, this is Shavuot. The hand shall bring it unto the house of Yahuwah, thy Elohim. Thou shalt not seethe a goat in its mother's milk. What is he talking about? What's the issue here?
Pagan practices.
I'm sorry, what?
Pagan practices. In the land of Canaan, the Canaanites had a fertility rite.
I can understand that, but I want to go here because they weren't practicing paganology there. They were learning truth. The first thing he said, you will not do this. Why? Did you hear what it says? My blood I'll sacrifice, not yours. My sacrifice of blood, not yours. Woo. You mean he actually had a blood sacrifice? Oh, it was a future one, wasn't it? What was his blood sacrifice? His what?
His son.
His son was a blood sacrifice. Now, this is why it's very critical. You do not do this all the way through at any time. We'll get into the blood sacrifice and another sacrifice here a little bit later. Yes.
I'm sorry. One of the takes on this is that it means do not kill a young goat while it is still in its mother's milk, meaning nursing, so that the sacrifice taken for the sacrifices in the temple or in the tabernacle are to be weaned offspring, not baby animals.
I understand that, but what I'm looking here, my dear, is this. He's talking about three times a year. Just three times a year. Talking three times a year here. He's not talking day one, day two, for 365 days a year. He's talking about the high days. These three times a year, and there are certain sacrifices that you must perform before the Creator of heaven and earth. One of those sacrifices, which he calls my sacrifice, is different. We'll get to this in a minute. Pay attention to the holy days. That's what he's addressing. He's addressing this important period of time. Being the first fruits of thy ground, thou shalt bring unto the house of Yahweh, thy God. Everywhere, by the way, you see this thing about the seed and the goat's milk. Everything has to do with the Passover. My blood sacrifice. Not the Israelites' sacrifice of blood. It's my sacrifice of blood. Very important. He goes on down here and he said, now there's going to go, I'm going to send an angel. And this angel is going to do something. You better pay attention to what he has to say. Why? Because he's not going to give you any pardon. He's not going to give you any excuse. He's not going to overlook what was written. He's not going to override or overrule anything that the Creator of heaven and earth has told him to do. And one of them is, if they disobey, wipe them out. That was one of the rules. You think God actually would actually kill people? He did before. Remember El Shaddai? By the way, the word Adonai, you know what that really means in straight English? My Lord. You know what El Shaddai means? My mighty God. Not just a mighty God, but mine. All right? Now, this particular angel is going to use, he says, my name is in him. What does that mean? He has the name of God in him? Stop and think here for just a moment. Have you ever, I don't know if you ever hear this term, stop in the name of the law. Oh. So the angel's going to say, stop in the name of Elohim. Yahweh, or Yahuwah, however you want to pronounce the name. He's got full authority to carry out the word. To carry out the word of Devarim Elohim. Everything. He has full authority of it. Now that's what it means his name is in him. He's got the authority of my name. My authority is behind him 100%. Yes.
Is this like the Melech Yahweh that you taught
Melech
about?
Melech Yahweh. That means that yes. That's what basically boiled down. Melech Yahweh. That was mentioned earlier in the very first part of the chapter. First part of the book. Genesis it was. You know, indeed, you will obey his voice. Do not. And do all that I speak. But thou shalt indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak. Then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. My angel shall go before you and bring ye unto the Amorites, the Hittites, so on and so forth, and I will cut them off. But when you go there, don't submit yourself to any other Elohim. Don't respond. You must submit yourself to, if anything, this angel's Melech that I am sending ahead of you. You better submit to him because he speaks in my authority, my power, my might. Even greater than Moses. Even greater than Moses. Chapter 24. Okay, wait.
I was gone for a second. Did you guys already talk about verse 19, 23 verse 19, you are not to boil a young animal in its mother's milk?
Yes.
Did you already talk about that?
Yes.
Oh. Because I read a commentary in my other Bible that said that the reason he said not to do that, it had nothing to do with eating, you know, separating dairy and meat. It had to do with not, it was a pagan practice, a fertility ritual.
Right. Yeah, that they always say it's a pagan practice. Well, what I'm trying to tell, I'm introducing something to you. They were not doing pagan things. They just got scared to death right now. They're terrified. And they're still hearing what thou shalt do, or thou shalt not do. And the thing about the goat milk has to do in association with the three times a year. And this is very, very important. Because he says this is my blood sacrifice, not yours. Doesn't it belong to Israel? It belongs to me. It's my blood sacrifice. All right, so now we have to figure out seated in his mother's milk. What does that mean? We didn't boil it in your mother's milk. What does boiling mean? What does cooking mean? What does it mean has a relationship to a holy day? Yes. Yeah, yes.
Well, I just want, what I was wanting to say earlier was this, because it is in relation to the three times a year. One of the prescriptions for the Passover sacrifice, which could be a kid, it could be a lamb, it was not to be seethed, it was not to be boiled, it was not to be sodden in water, it was to be roasted. With fire.
Correct.
So this does pertain to that, but the lands that they were going into, and if you look at verse 23, for my angel shall go before thee, bring thee into the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Canaanites. Then it goes on, thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images.
Right.
So because part of the practice, and it was huge in this area of Eretz Israel at the time, what was to become Eretz Israel, that the same time of the year as the Passover sacrifice was going on, these other people would take a kid, they would boil it in their... Ostraca have been found relating to this with inscriptions on, pagan, and what they would do is then sprinkle the milk on the soil of the land as a way of appeasing their god, Baal, and that they, as a result of that, would then expect to have a wonderful harvest. It is related to the harvest and to the three
yes.
times a year.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to say.
I know what you're saying. I don't want to argue with it. I want to make it in connection with the holy days.
Yes.
We're talking the three that... No, the world didn't know anything about the high days of God. The first time you've been introduced to that mankind is right here. They didn't exist before.
No, but they did have...
Well, they didn't exist before. The holy days did not exist before until God said, this is it. Now, the personal opinion, it's okay. I'm not disagreeing with your personal opinion, nor am I disagreeing with people's commentary about the idea. I thought what I'm saying is that when it comes and it says, my blood sacrifice, very important terminology.
Well, I've heard the same situation.
Right.
And yet, does that mean it's okay if I boil a kid at Passover if it's in cow's milk. I mean, this doesn't, there's
well,
a problem
Passover
here.
Well, Passover is both roasted and not boiled. We know that.
So why, to me, since this is stated more than once, I think three times at least.
All around the same period of time.
So, but there's an argument against what you're saying, and there's an argument against it being in its mother's milk. Neither one are clear. So to me, it's impossible at this point to say that it was the paganism he was worried about.
I guess we're not getting chapter 24 today, are we? I'm not telling you have to believe what I believe. I'm not telling you have to hear what I believe. Don't have to accept what I'm saying. I am saying the blood sacrifice, he says, is mine. And I find it extremely powerful in Scripture. More than any other blood sacrifice. I give a blood sacrifice for sin. This one God didn't give. It was his, not mine. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
There is a difference between the two. Blood sacrifice. My blood sacrifice, is it? He's given up blood.
But that's not what it says. You're talking about this verse. You're not explaining what it means. You're going on something else and not addressing what it means.
I'll put that way. I do not know what it means. How about that? Matthew 24. I can be wrong, people. I've been wrong before. Everybody in this room deemed me to be wrong before. What else is new?
But wrong about what? I still don't know what you're saying.
That's the matter of being wrong. It's a matter of I don't know what you're saying. What's your point?
It's not wrong or right. It's just very interesting. Yes, I agree with you. This blood sacrifice, especially in connection with this angel. Yes, it's amazing. I'm just saying it's not either or, it's both.
All right. Exodus 24, verse 8. Another blood thing is not the same. 24, verse 8. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it upon the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which Yahweh has made with you concerning all things of these words. Now the blood covenant is different than my blood sacrifice. What did they do? They had to give up and have what's called a whole offering. And they had to give what's called a shalom offering or peace offering. Not making peace, it means have a Thanksgiving offering. This was not a sin offering at all. It was an offering. They offered it to God. And it's called, and Moses took the blood of the animal, both oxen and of the, what was the other one? Oxen and, well, both were ox. One was for a whole offering, meaning turned completely into smoke, but the blood was used to make a blood covenant with them. Now, that's what they had to do. When they pulled out of Egypt, the goat or the lamb represented a sacrifice that the eternal creator is going to give. This is the one what they gave, that they may have a covenant with God. They may make an agreement with God. I can't get in the covenant today. We'll run out of time. But there's two. Sometimes when we read these things, we kind of associate them all together, the very same thing. Now God goes out of his way to call one thing something, it calls out of another one something entirely different, based upon different circumstances. And we have a tendency, because we live in this, this world of chaos, we have a tendency, especially in English, to say, well, the law and the Torah and the principles and the commandment, they're all the same thing. No, they're not. I've been very careful to separate these things for you because, see, we have been thrown into, we've thrown everything that God said into this big, huge, giant basket. And we say, oh, which one am I? I think, oh, this one. This. We don't even look at what we're thrown into this box. Or put it this way, thrown into a box and we close the lid. We say, oh, there's God. That's what he said. I know he said. But we don't open it up and ever look at it. That is, we don't open up the truth. The truth will set you free. Nothing else. I'm not saying I understand everything. I'm doing my very best to have you think, separate your thinking from what the Christian world has taught you and what the Jewish world has taught you and say, what does it say? Does it make a difference? As we go along and we look, we're trying to find out what on earth is a blood covenant. Do you know what it is? What on earth is my blood sacrifice? Do you know what it is? Why are they different? Answer.
Well, I have a question. And it's about the three times of year that the males were required to come. And it says, does all your versions say no unleavened bread? Okay, does any say fermentation?
No, on the first one.
No unleavened bread is to be... Excuse me, hold on. Three times a year, all your males, neither sacrifice the blood of my sacrifice. Mine says with fermentation, because on Sukkot, it's commanded to have two loaves that actually are leavened. So, I'm sorry. So I'm just wondering, does it really mean unleavened bread, or is it referring to something else?
No.
Mine says fermentation.
Same thing. Fermentation. Yes. Anytime, anything, bread will ferment.
Well, I thought maybe it might mean wine or something like that.
No.
Well, then how?
Because wine is to be drunk on Passover.
Right, but the because it says you shouldn't offer my blood sacrifice with
leavened bread.
But then we're commanded on Shavuot.
Yeah, to offer. Okay, Shavuot, we raise it up unto him. Why do we raise up these two loaves of bread to him? What does it mean? I explained it last time. Do you have any idea what it means? No. The harvest has come in. The harvest has come in. And now you make bread from the earth. And we lift up the bread to earth. This is blessed be your God, bringing forth the bread of the earth, not of heaven, of earth. Who are the bread of the earth?
We are.
We will not be unleavened until, if I use that terminology, we're dead and buried and in a grave and rot. And then God raises up from the dead a spirit being, then we don't have any of the earth. But as blessed be you who brings forth the bread of the earth. If God did not bring forth the bread of the earth, God did not bring forth you and me and believers to know the truth, the world will starve to death. Spiritually. In agony.
I think it's worth looking at the term sacrifice because you are right. In Exodus 23:18, it says, thou shalt not offer the blood of my Zebach.
Yeah,
and the Zebach is the communion. It's the sacrifice of right. What makes you righteous? It's the sacrifice of communion, being in right relationship to God. Later on, Exodus 24, the bulls, the oxen are slaughtered, but the sacrifice is the whole burnt offering, and the other one is the shelem offering, or the peace offering, which are different offerings.
Yeah, actually, in plurality, it's holot, because it's more than one.
Yeah, so
okay?
The
zibach and zikmahuim.
The zibach.
The zikmahuim, because it's a feminine word, and it has plurality, so there's many things taking place.
Yeah. So when God, Richard, my question about this then, you are saying God, when God says, this is my Zebach, it's actually in a way prophetically
referring to the Messiah. You don't have the leaven.
Correct.
Right.
And this real simple to understand that, because we have this thing of looking backwards. But if you were there, you wouldn't have the slightest idea what he's talking about. That includes, seething a goat in his mother's milk. You'd say, huh? If that was, quote, going on someplace else in another part of the world, which you didn't live in, your family didn't live in, you lived where in Egypt, lived down there in the land of Goshen, and you had the best land to face the earth of all of Egypt, and you had glorious, good crops, wonderful crops. You had good cattle, you had good sheep, you had good oxen. You didn't have pigs and pay analogy there. That's the reason why they were given that land, because Joseph wanted them to be separate from, and they were separate from. Oh, I got to get me another question. Oh, I can't go. I got to go 24th later. 24th chapter. It's too much. Go ahead.
Well, when Jacob comes down, though, Joseph sends them there because being a shepherd is an offense to the people in Egypt. So they wouldn't have been doing the goat thing in Egypt. That must have been somewhere because they didn't apparently. Maybe vegetarian was a big deal. I don't know. But, it says that being a shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So he didn't even want their animals near Egypt. He put them way over in Goshen.
However, he had the Pharaoh wanting to, underhandedly take care of the flock foxes. That's another issue. I do not know. I wasn't there. I have no answer for it. I hope... Hope we can kind of put ourselves... Now, these 24 elders were hearing this. Aaron heard it. Hur heard it. Moses told them everything God said. And we say, okay, they should do it. Wait a minute. You got a whole group of people for the first time in the history of humankind, that God's going to use a lot of people all at once. A lot. And why he chose 70 is very, very critical. We can't go in that today. We are not to listen to the mob. Put it bluntly, we're not to listen to the mob. We're listening to the elders. And we had to say, who's the elder? If that elder is upright, the elder is just, if the elder is holy, pay attention. There's something that Yeshua said to his disciples. What did he call them? You are... ones I am sending, I put you responsible, I put you in charge. Nobody else moves into that slot. Nobody else moves into that slot. I know many of you have heard, someone says, I'm an evangelist. I'm an evangelist. Oh, this guy was an evangelist. No. The only reason why you believe anything, if I can use this word, I hope it's honestly true, anything that's written in the New Testament is because an apostle wrote it down or told a very prominent man like Luke what to say and what to put down and why. You understand what I'm saying? If it's not written in the New Testament and people have all this kind of weird ideas and belief systems and quote, hope in vain, they didn't base it upon what the apostles are saying. How many, be very blunt with you, Jeff went through this thing, how many of you have been raised up and told that when you die, you go to heaven? And yet the apostle Paul said, Peter said, no, you do not. Who's lying? Peter? Obviously Peter's lying, because every Christianity believes just the opposite. Well, the mob believes differently, but Peter must have been a liar. Okay, let's cast out the writings of Peter. Oh, by the way, Peter influenced Luke. Let's cast Luke out. Oh, that leaves me Matthew, Mark, John. All right. Which one do I keep? Now, your life based, your life is based upon what's called faith, which is truth. Do you believe it? Or do you doubt it? Most of you have given up family, given up home, given up work, given up friends, given up everything because you know where truth is at. And you walk that way. When you walk that way, something is going to be removed from your world. What's going to be removed from your world? Every lie you've ever believed in or ever heard is going to perish and never be part of your world. You understand what I'm saying? Sometimes these Bible studies turns into a very boisterous thing from out of my mouth. But I hope you will forgive me for being this way. But I am so dedicated to knowing and saying this is what it says. I know it's the truth. I cannot say, oh, I think I want to go over here because I kind of like that story. Get back over here. Well, yeah, over here. I like that story. Get back over here. I may not be able to move where you are moving to. Accept that. I can't go to a belief system that when I read what is written, I believe very strongly it's the truth. Do I understand everything that's written? No. Do I beg my creator of heaven and earth to let me know what it says? Yeah. And sometimes he says, not yet. I'm sorry. But I think there's something I need to say. There's another big message that's going to come real quick. And it's overpowering me. And God help me. And pray that you will be able to endure it. Yes.
I would just say, I've said it once before, that there's really no excuse because we've always had, the word hasn't changed. So if you, I would say, if you accepted a belief system that's not written here, you are partly accountable. And I would say we have the same issue today in the Messianic circles. We have to stay humble. As you said, we don't have all the answers. We need to compare and study.
And hope God will let us understand. If he does not give us the insight, we don't have that insight, period. And we should not be upset. Because sometimes if we got the insight, we probably couldn't take it. That's what Jesus said, or Yeshua said to his apostles, right? You can't take it if I told you. You throw it. You just go hang yourself now if you did. Because too much. I'm okay with not knowing it. I'm only okay trying to go over here and I said, okay, what did you say? What did you mean? I do my very best to try to break down the Hebrew, break down the Greek, break down, find out what it refers to. How come this relates to this and how does it relate there? Where is it? Where is it pointing me at? I want to know where I'm going. But God does not tell everybody where he's going. Did he tell Abraham where he's going? No. Did he tell Moses where he's going to go? Yeah, but didn't know the trip. They had no idea what. The Israelites had no idea when they cried out God to deliver them from the burdens of the taskmasters that God had, I'm moving you completely lock, stock, and barrel out of here. That's not what they were hoping for.
I was going to say, I don't think you need to apologize for anything. I think this is good because we're all wanting to learn the truth. It's a wrestling out of. It's not so much just one man saying all this stuff. We're all wrestling it out as a community. So I actually like the discussions, however sometimes heated or appear to be heated they are. But it's good to stop, say, I don't understand that, and let's get into that. Well, the Word says this. And because to me, the Holy Spirit is the one who leads and guides us into all truth. As much as we want to beat our heads against the wall, I need to know this. He knows what you need to know. Only going to show you as much as you can even bear.
Right.
He said, I have many things to show you right now,
right,
but you are
cannot
not able. So the Lord is the one that opens our eyes. But this is good. I think it's great.
I'm way over time. I want to go ahead. Go ahead, Michael.
I just wanted to say, I'm not trying to disagree with you or argue your point. I didn't understand what you were saying. I was trying to hear, okay, what's the point you're making? I wasn't getting it. So it's not a matter of arguing with you or thinking
I'll probably write an article about it. Help me. I can explain that to the other part. Because this is what I'm going to see. When I see something differently than most people do, doesn't mean it's the truth. I do my very best to understand it. Now, before we go on, I've got to call it quits. I have a thing I want to try to accomplish before we go too far into this thing. I'd like to finish the 24th chapter, but I won't be able to finish it today.